Squadron Podcast, Chicago's home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
You are listening to episode 14 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. Hey guys, we made it to episode 14. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we did not suck.
We didn't. So, yeah, I'm here with Alex, Ron, and Andrea, like usual. And I want to start by just saying a big, huge thank you for the support that we got through the Patreon. So, I'm going to pull it up here on my phone. Right now, as of today, today is Monday, November 14th. We have 113 people backing us, and we have $280 per episode pledged.
That's bananas.
Yeah. So we are totally, I mean, this is not a competition, but we're totally smashing any other podcasts per month.
Fair.
Patreon beef.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. And I know that, you know, we're offering cool swag and all that for people who do the Patreon. And honestly, most of that money is going straight there, right back to the swag. But I still think, you know, it's great to get some support from the community, and I love it. Let's continue here with our little Patreon update / segment. So every month we're doing a raffle. This month we're giving away the official FFG acrylic bigs. I won a second one of these in a tournament a couple weeks ago, so I was like, hey, you know what? Let's give it away. So I pulled up the list of patrons. I did some fancy Excel magic called cut and paste, and for however many entries they got, depending on what level they are, I'd use the random number generator, and the winner of the bigs is Anthony Chang of Seattle.
Nice.
Ooh, yeah. Sweet. Congratulations. Yeah. That's Anthony, awesome. Someone from Seattle, too.
Right? Yeah.
So, Anthony, first, thank you very much for supporting us on Patreon. He's one of our $3 an episode patrons, which is awesome.
Nice. More swag to come.
Yes, absolutely. More swag to come. And I also just, you know, part of our Patreon promise is to give people shout-outs. So, I'm going to get my serious voice on here. Here we go. Timothy Reese, Ignacio Ferrer, Christopher Little, Jonathan McCandless, and Nick Palmero, you are all benevolent. Thank you for your support. If you're not one of our patrons, that's cool. If you want to be, we actually right now, we only have 28 slots left in our patron, on our Patreon, because all of the cards that we're doing, we're only doing a limited run. Because we want to make them, you know, valuable, you know, we don't want to just, you know, print, you know, 1,000 copies of everything we're making, you know, make it limited, make it, give it a little bit of worth, you know,
make it special.
Exactly. So all of our patrons who are at the $2 or above are getting the Asajj Ventress card. Those are in the mail. If you had a patron withdrawal on November 1st, if your first withdrawal is going to be on December 1st, I'll drop it in on December 1st once, you know, all the credit cards clear and stuff. If you want to support us, go to patreon.com/goldsquadron. Like I said, only 28 slots left. More cool swag to come for our current patrons. I just paid the bill to Paula Rue for our cool two-card set that's coming, and I'm excited for that. We'll get you guys previews once that is ready to go.
Unlock the hologram.
So today for our main topic, we are continuing our series on how to practice X-Wing. Specifically today, we're talking about selecting a good list that fits your playstyle. Before we talk about, you know, setting up the or formations or anything else to do with the game, we need to ask, what are we going to fly? As of today, we have 212 different pilots in the game. 75 Rebel pilots, 83 Imperial pilots, 54 Scum pilots, and you know, when we're building a list, you're going to have anywhere from 3 to 4 ships, usually. Right now, the popular number is 3. And we need to figure out what in the world makes a list good.
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Do you have $1 million?
I wish.
Then you can't have the answer.
I would be doing this podcast from a beach in Bora Bora if I had $1 million.
Now, my million-dollar question is, of those pilots, how many of them are Sabine?
Touché.
Currently, what is that going to be?
Three.
Two?
Three?
Three with the, yeah.
With the fighter.
Yeah, if you count the fighter.
Still running with the how many pilots are Sabine jokes, huh?
Let's get into this. So, tell me, what are some of the properties of a good list?
Well, there's really just a few basics. Things that are going to make a good list are strong synergy, amount of hit points versus amount of damage versus damage reduction, like your defensive abilities, and then also the dials, how maneuverable are your ships. So it's kind of a combination of those three. Every list, ideally, you would love to have all of those in one thing, but that's kind of the trick with X-Wing, is every list is going to have a weakness, is going to have to sacrifice something. I really think depends on your playstyle and what thing that you want to sacrifice.
Andrea, anything you want to throw in there?
No, I think that really just kind of hits the nail on the head. And something to always consider is making sure that you don't get too gimmicky with things. A lot of times it might be fun to do that, but then if your gimmick isn't successful, then you usually get crushed.
Right, and before we go too far into this, let me explain. Today we're specifically talking about competitive lists for tournaments and things like that. You know, we can talk about shenanigans lists another time, but today, yeah, we're talking about
fair.
You know, tournament lists. Just in case, because we have casual players and tournament players who listen. So I just want to make sure we're you know, setting the expectations there.
Absolutely.
What she said actually is a good point. I think we actually kind of touched on this at the Worlds episode, where I think, I'm not sure who it was, it might have been Chris who asked Alex about, or no, it was Sozin who asked Alex about, like, how many dice you can roll in a single turn with one ship or a single attack with one ship. And Alex had a good point. Yeah, you can roll a lot of dice in a single attack with one ship, but what are you sacrificing to do that? And when you build a good list, synergy is an important thing. But you also have to have all those other variables. Your list has to be balanced. I think we've moved a little beyond rock, paper, scissors. We're probably like more rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock. but we're getting there.
What I did here is, in my mind, I kind of think of five categories when it comes to properties of a good list. And depending on what list you have, you're going to have more or less of each of these categories. So let me know what you guys think about these categories after I go through them, or if you disagree, agree. Yeah. So action efficiency. You know, good list has action efficiency. A good list reduces dice variance. A good list has maneuverability. A good list has abilities that interferes with your opponent's results or their goals. And lastly, survivability. So I definitely think all those things you guys already said kind of fit into those five categories there.
Totally.
Yeah, I agree. And like we've said, there's no list that has all five.
No, absolutely not.
If there was, we'd all be playing it.
Yes, we would.
We're trying to find it. Gold Squadron Labs right
now. Everyone would be playing it, though, so that would be boring.
Absolutely. Yeah, so... here's a couple of examples I'll just kind of go through. We'll save that for later. We'll save the good stuff for later. We'll talk about, all right, so, you know, there's a ton of upgrades and pilot abilities in the game that have effects related to that list that I gave. Now, in order to differentiate between which ones are good and bad, we kind of have to figure out what abilities are efficient, because the game is broken down into each card costing a certain amount of points, right? So that's the first thing. Is it worth its points? You'll hear that phrase a lot. Is that ability available to the ship you want to fly? And lastly, what conditions need to be met in order to get that effect to work? Because there are tons of cards that are in your binder, especially the competitive player, that when you build a list, you always gloss over them because you know, hey, that's just bad. It's not worth its points. Or it doesn't fit with what I'm trying to do. And in our notes, guys, I made a list of them. We don't have to touch on all of them. You might have to even look up what some of them are because I put some pretty obscure ones in there. I'll start with the first one. So Expose. Expose is a EPT that says as an action, you can increase your attack by one and reduce your agility by one in order to do that. Now, on a ship like, let's say, the Decimator, or I think right now that's it, right? Because the Ghost doesn't have an EPT.
Because of this card.
Right, because of that card. You can't... It works on the Decimator, but every other ship, reducing your agility is a bad idea.
Yes, it is.
Even for one attack die, because you're only going to use, most of the time, you're going to use that attack die one time.
Yeah, I don't think reducing your agility would be as bad if the card didn't cost 4 points, which leads to your thing of, is it worth its points?
There you go. 4 points to say, hey, I'm easier to hit. I might hit you harder for this one turn, but you probably kill me.
So or at least get me very, very close to dead.
Absolutely. Another example, which it was popular in the wave like one and two metas, is Marksmanship. It's 3 points. And it says that as an action, you can change, you basically get a focus ability with all your attacks this turn. And one of the focuses you can change to a crit. Now, that's great. But the problem is, I personally, and most competitive players, would rather have a focus token because you have the flexibility for defense or offense. And it doesn't cost you 3 points to do a focus action.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, the card is useful in very niche situations, and I don't think it's tier one in any way.
Right, and that's what we're kind of looking for. There's definitely, you can make an argument for almost any of these cards.
Yep.
In certain places, but we're kind of talking about the general list building. I'm looking for good things, right?
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. You could do some fun gimmicky thing with that in Bossk, and it seems good. But you know, there was a lot of people playing Bossk at Worlds. Mm-hmm. The actual pilot.
Yep.
None of them had marksmanship.
Yep. Well, you're so good at transitions, man, because the next card is a Houndstooth card, right?
Yeah, buddy.
The Houndstooth title, it's 6 points. You get to take the Nashtaw Pump. I know that, Mr. Alex Davey, if you're listening, I know that you like that card, but it's not worth its points.
He did say he won a store championship with that, didn't he?
He said he won a game.
Oh, I thought it was a store championship.
No, a game.
That is a big difference.
Yeah.
I can honestly say I have never seen this card in play.
Oh, I played the crap out of it when it came out and realized it was not good.
Yeah, it's like, all right, end game. I get a Z95. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't really work. Once in a while, you might squeak out a win, like Alex was saying. You know, like, oh hey, I got a ship that could shoot. Who knows? But it's not good. 6 points, to get a Z95 in the end game doesn't really work.
Nope.
You guys want to pick one off the list? Go ahead and trash it a little bit.
I could definitely say that Leia is probably terrible because it's the only card on the list I don't know what she does.
Yeah, so Leia says that you can discard her and all of your red moves this turn are white. Now, that sounds like, oh, hey, sweet. Okay, cool. Here's a couple of the problems, right? It's 4 points, I believe. Mm-hmm. Off the top of my head, it's 4 points. And you have to have a crew slot available to you. So... especially when this card came out, that's a Falcon.
The Falcon and the Outrider.
And the Outrider, yep. Those are accounted for. It can work possibly in Epic, but in standard play, don't work.
Well, in fairness, she did come with Tantive, so, but that's about it. That was the only redeeming factor.
Yeah, I was going to say, she came with the Tantive. I think that was her whole purpose.
Yeah.
But in an epic game where you can have, 12 ships doing red maneuvers, that's awesome.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. I will K-turn the whole fleet behind you and not be stressed.
We're going to have to ask Rick about, see if that car's good. He's our epic expert.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, Darwin too. I mean, Darwin did a great job of really using all the big ships to their advantage for a league.
All right, who wants to pull out the next card here?
Okay, so I'm just picking a random one that I have no idea what it is, which is Saboteur. Saboteur says it's a crew card, and it's worth 2 points. And it says, action, choose one enemy ship at range one and roll one attack die. On a hit or a crit result, choose one random face-down damage card assigned to that ship, flip it face up, and resolve it.
Right. So the effect itself sounds like, oh, hey, that kind of sounds like it's good.
No, though. I mean, you have to do that in place of an action where you have a ship at range one.
And it might happen.
And it might happen. It's a 50-50 shot of it happening. So if you're at range one of a ship, you want to be taking an action that allows you to hit that ship with greater success. Not just... if they have a damage card, you have a 50-50 shot of dealing a crit that might not even really be that impactful. Sometimes it is really impactful. Like, you get that crit that is just totally clutch and it just swings the game. But that doesn't happen too often. So a lot of times you'll get a crit that does little to nothing to affect the situation.
Saboteur makes me think of like a Hail Mary. It's a Hail Mary. You don't practice it. It's just like one of those, like, hey, I just, but that's in this game, you don't ever bring upgrade cards that cost points, just for SNG,
and
you
for
know?
2 points, like, that's, I know that's, it seems crazy, but 2 points is a lot for an opportunity cost to be able to equip something else.
For sure, auto thrusters cost 2 points.
Yeah, well, totally different upgrade slot, but yes.
I'm going to take one because I think that this used to be a decent card. So munitions failsafe, and Ron can correct me because I know Ron used to run bombers. But I think this card was just killed off with guidance chips. So it's a 1 point modification when attacking with a secondary weapon that instructs you to discard it. Do not discard it unless the attack hits. So, I mean, Ron, was this in use before guidance chips actually came out and made bombs good?
No,
it still wasn't. All right, no. Then never mind. It was just always bad.
You were paying one more point for your poor weapons because honestly, bombs really didn't really come, or I should say, ordnance really didn't come at all successful until you got the extra munitions, because it basically lowered the point cost of those.
That's true.
Things.
Yeah.
It wasn't until extra munitions that, like, honestly, any missile torpedo was worth their salt.
Cool. So just ignore me. This card was always bad.
It was always bad. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason to ever take that card.
In all fairness, I think I have seen people like fail to run it, as in run it and fail. But so like I actually like recognize the name of that card as opposed to some of the other cards in this list that I didn't even know
what?
Were a thing.
You wasted a point, but all your munitions hit on the first try.
Yay.
Yeah. I mean, there is a card in here that I actually did use quite a bit. I used Moff Gerard a lot when the Decimator first came out.
Yeah, when it first came out, definitely was good.
I
but
used
now...
it a lot. I mean, I would put it on the Decimator with two intelligence agents and on a low pilot skill Decimator, like Oiken or something. So it's like I'm getting in there, I'm ramming you, I'm seeing your dial, and then as I take crits from being so close in the engagement, I'm choking off my intelligence agents to get rid of the nasty crits.
So for those of you who don't know what Moff Gerard does, his card says, when you are dealt a face-up damage card, you may discard this upgrade card or another crew upgrade card to flip that damage card face down without resolving its effect. So when it first came out, sure, it worked. Just like Ron said, that's a great strategy. But now with Palpatine, takes this off of playability.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
I don't like this card because it conflicts with canon. And that's why I don't like it.
Fair.
for a random deleted scene, but I still don't like it.
Flavor judge.
Here's another one I want to throw out there. It's a newer one. why is it that R3 Astromech has not been seen in competitive play? So R3 Astromech came with the ARC 170, so very, very new. And it says, once per round, when attacking with a primary weapon, you may cancel one of your eyeball results during the modify attack dice step to assign one evade token to your ship, and it costs 2 points.
I think there's a couple of reasons. First, it's super new. I don't know how much testing has gone into something a little gimmicky. That's kind of a gimmicky ability. The other thing is, so many lists are built, right, with the ability to turn action economy, like tokens, into hits, that it's I find it very difficult to not want to spend that focus and punch through a hit on your opponent, as opposed to save it for an evade when you're not even sure what their result is. You could potentially take away that focus, get the evade, and then they don't even roll and hit you. Whereas opposed to when you're attacking, that damage is guaranteed to be dealt. Whether they defend against it is another issue. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Totally. Absolutely. And another point there is, if you want to try to make it work, it's going to cost you. And that's what we talked about a little bit earlier, about how much do things cost to make them work. Sure, I could get this to kind of work on a low PS T70, and I could put comms relay on it. And then if I throw, and that's that word we're going to keep saying, is if. If I throw a focus that I don't have a focus token to adjust, then I'm going to get an evade and hopefully have that evade, right? And keep me around longer. But again, I'm now playing 5 points for this possible evade token.
Right. And when instead you could just take a powerful astromech droid that just guarantees mitigates the damage, like R2-D2, both of which like are much easier way of mitigating damage. An evade token and a regen is still mitigating damage.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's just not a good card. I didn't think it was a great card when I saw it first come out, but I wasn't really 100% sure.
A couple of other ones here. Let's jump to some illicit cards here. A definitely a gimmicky card, but we don't see it much in competitive play. I know I have not seen it a finish in the top of any tournament that I've ever been a part of. That's Dead Man Switch.
Typically, right? Any card that makes you have to kill a ship to do something is not going to be good.
Especially when it's your own ship.
Correct.
Yep.
I should have really clarified. That, yeah. I should have clarified that statement. Like, I will predict that the Chewbacca pilot from Heroes of the Resistance doesn't see much play.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think, if somebody wants to challenge us, I do not think that Chewbacca pilot in a premier tournament will ever see top 32.
Me either.
Ooh.
Now you just gave Marcel some ammunition.
I know.
Right?
Prove me wrong, Marcel.
He's like, I'll show you. I'll fly to the top 16 at Worlds in May.
That's right. So, you know, we have a few more here, but I want to keep things moving because we have a lot to cover. There's tons of cards out there that just don't really work for their squad points. Try to avoid them. Ask people maybe who are more experienced than you, if you're not super experienced in squad building, but always ask yourself those three questions that we started with. Is the ability available to your ship? That's obvious. You know, do I have that slot? Are the conditions that need to be met worth the effect? And how much does that cost compared to a effect that gives you a similar result?
Yeah, another thing that, you know, that you could kind of use is almost like kind of like a golden rule. If you're like, man, I really don't know if this card's good, look at the effect. Does the effect just happen? Do you just get that effect if this thing happens? Like, for instance, like push the limit. Push the limit's great because you can simply always do it unless you're already stressed, right?
Right.
Yep. R2-D2, you always get that shield back as long as you're performing a green. Like, you're looking for abilities that are kind of guarantees in a sense. Like Palpatine, one of the best upgrades of the game, because he can always Palpatine.
Yep. So let's jump back here. And if you guys saw on the list, on the notes here, if we go back to the properties of a good list, I put some examples of good cards that have those properties. So Action Deficiency, Ron, you just said it. Push the Limit is a great card. As long as you can clear that stress, you are doubling your action efficiency, right? K4 Security Droid, you do a green maneuver, you get a free target lock. Experimental Interface, even though right now we don't have too many action EPTs or cards right now, if we got one that's really good in the future, that is basically very similar to Push the Limit. And one right now that's in high contention is the X7 title, and I would like to take a second to talk about it.
Yeah, I would think so.
I love me some X7 title.
I'm so sick of X7 title, man. I mean,
so Alex, for those of us who don't know what the X7 title is, obviously we all do, but for a listener, let us know what that does.
So it's a TIE Defender title. It's a when you do a 3, 4, 5 speed maneuver, assign an evade token to your ship.
Your ship also costs two points less.
It's minus 2 points, and you lose the cannon and missile upgrade.
Correct.
Yeah, so you're not going to use the missile upgrade, so that's not a big deal.
You don't need the cannon upgrade because you got 3 dice.
So the action efficiency on this card is ridiculous for a couple of reasons. It's almost unstoppable, right? So it's the way the card is worded is if you execute a 3, 4, 5 maneuver, you don't have to complete the maneuver. It doesn't matter if you were stressed before.
Doesn't matter if you're bumped.
Right? It doesn't matter almost anything. If you dial in a 3, 4, 5, you get an evade token. Period.
I was gonna say, how is it stoppable?
It's not. It's
okay. You said almost, so I was just curious. I was like, man, am I missing something?
It is stoppable if you kill the ship before it can use it.
Fair. Okay. I will agree with that one because my list did do that a couple times.
There you go. You just wipe it before it gets to do any of its shenanigans, and then it's.
Although it's still going to have the evade token the first time. So.
Yes, it will.
Never mind.
So, yeah, action efficiency is amazing. Defenders right now are really popular. They were all over Worlds because every turn you could get Focus Evade.
Yeah, and if you combo it with, Ryad with a Push the Limit like we were talking about, and Vessery, you can every turn have Target Lock, Focus, and Evade.
So good.
3 actions.
So good. So let's go on to our next category here. So reducing dice variance. Ron touched on a little bit of passive dice modification. A couple of these would be something like Predator. Predator says that you can re-roll an attack dice and 2 attack dice if the pilot skill of the enemy that you're shooting is 2 or lower. It doesn't matter if you're stressed. You just get to do it. Lone Wolf has a little bit more condition, but same idea. The condition just says that you have to. If you threw a blank, you get to re-roll it on attack and defense as long as you don't have anybody within range 1 to 2. And another passive dice modification would be Auto Thrusters. And Auto Thrusters is arguably one of the best cards in the game because just like X7, if you meet the condition for it, it's just ridiculously good. Right? You throw that blank result on defense, you go, that's not a blank, that's an evade because I'm out of arc or I'm at range 3. Which those pilots, of course, are trying to do that on purpose. Next category here is maneuverability. Ships with boost are good. Ships with barrel roll are also good. If they have a good dial, we talked about that. Using things like engine upgrade and vector thrusters on appropriate ships, of course. If that's what you like, your game for yourself is more about positioning these type of ships with these abilities. They're going to appeal to abilities to interfere with your opponent's results or their end goals. Biggs Darklighter is a big pain in the butt.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah. The only T-65 worth it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Love you, Biggs.
So, yeah, if you can shoot Biggs, you have to shoot Biggs. Now, we did get he got quote-unquote nerfed with the, you can target somebody else with ordnance, with if you have him target locked or something like that. If you have a weapon that could not target him, but target somebody else, you can use it. But still extremely powerful. He saves some of those more fragile ships that you have going on. Sensor Jammer, right? Says, hey, that is a focus, not a hit anymore. And if your opponent doesn't have a focus, then they hit you for one less.
Also, the new Hotshot Copilot would fall into this too, as it forces your opponent to spend their tokens when they may not want to.
Absolutely. It's funny, and because you can spend the focus even if you have nothing to modify, it's spent, right? Yep. It's gone.
Yeah, it's gone.
It's gone.
If you threw three blanks, you still have to spend your focus. If you threw three hits, you still have to spend your focus. It's just gone. And another example would be Crackshot, right? You say, hey, I don't care about all your shenanigans and all your auto thrusters and all this. That evade is gone. It's off the table. So it just helps you push damage through. And lastly here, survivability. Any ship that has high probability of evading attacks is great. Everybody's favorite example, Soontrafel, right? You could throw three blanks with Soontrafel and still evade a three-hit attack. You know, if you have the right situation there. Anything with regeneration is more survivable, really popular right now. You know, you have R2-D2, R5-P9, which we talked about earlier, Miranda. A lot of the Rebel ships have some type of regeneration, but those abilities, they're strong because they're basically, you're basically mitigating damage. You said, hey, that damage you gave me last turn, one less because I got a shield back. And of course, things with lots of hit points. On our live show, Lyle mentioned that one of the overseas players say that the ghost has lots of chunk, right?
Yeah, he said lots of meat.
Lots of meat, just chunk, just 16 hit points on a ghost, you know? If I can kill you before you get through those 16 hit points, it doesn't matter. 10 hits have gone through on me. So we've gone through all these things. We've talked about some bad cards and why they're inefficient or less efficient than they could be. We talked about abilities that are good and properties of good lists. It's a perfect opportunity to turn around and look at Worlds, which just happened 2 weeks ago from today, and compare some of our notes and what we talked about to the top 16 lists. So we'll just kind of jump around here, guys. If anything pops out to you, just go ahead and talk about it. I'll take the first one while you guys can think about it. Earlier, we were talking about the X7 title, and I have here 1, 2, 3 lists out of the top 16 at Worlds had defenders with X7. It raises their health. I know that on the stats on the card, it says that it has 3 shield and 3 hold, but I'm telling you, with that X7 title, it has a lot more than 3 shields. We were talking about at the live show, one of the guys was saying, hey, that's like saying it with that X7 title, it almost has like 10 shields because every single turn you're getting that X7 title. Why else are defenders good? They have that white K turn. So they're going to be turning around behind you. They're going to get that evade. They're going to get that focus. Now, the weakness to defenders is that they're predictable. Now, the K turns are good, not going to lie. You have to be willing to disengage and find another way to approach them in order to win that matchup. But defenders with X7 are fantastic.
Yeah, you're right. They have two weaknesses, actually. One, they're predictable. Two, they have medium pilot skill. Defenders ended up getting beat out by Korn and Miranda and Han Solo and Jake. And they just kept dodging all their arcs so they couldn't get shots.
I will take what was my just biased favorite list. Top 16, Philip Horney with Whisper Oiken. I will always have a soft spot for Phantoms because they're just... Cloaking is one of my favorite mechanics in the game. So any list that will bring a Phantom and a Decimator, it's just one of my favorite matchups. But it's just a lot of good stuff. Oiken, just going in there, getting the bumps off, setting up shots for Whisper, a Rebel Captive. If you want to shoot the Decimator, cool, get a stress. Whisper just hanging out, throwing out dice all day long. It's just a fun list to fly, and I love seeing it do well.
Way to rub it in, Alex.
Ron may have lost to that.
I may or may have not had a horrible exchange of dice on the very last roll of the game, and the only time Kallus triggered the entire game was on the last roll of dice when I could not kill Whisper.
Oh.
I was standing right there, and Philip thought he had lost, and he goes, oh, wait.
Kallus. Oh, there's more.
Kallus.
I was so happy.
I can say that I did not know that before I talked about this list.
I was so happy that Phil chose the slaver to put Kallus on in that game, because I felt like the TLTs were going to get far more shots at Whisper than Bossk was, or than the slaver was, which is true. But man, the string of dice just hated me on the last turn.
The dice taketh away.
Yeah, so, they didn't giveth in that game, that's for sure.
So Whisper's good, right? Whisper's good because she can actively avoid damage with being usually at PS9. If you're going to play her competitive, you're playing her at PS9 with the advanced cloaking device, and you're the first one to shoot, you go pew pew, and then all of a sudden now you have a focus token because of her effect. You're cloaked, and
And
you have a target lock with FCS, and you have Palpatine to back you up 99% of the time. It's really hard to hit Whisper.
Right. She's good because she has action efficiency. She reduces dice efficiency. She's maneuverable. But where she lacks is survivability. She has very little hit points, very little meat. If you have one really bad roll, we've all had our Whispers explode because of just one roll where you've rolled all focuses and no focus token or all blanks and she just dies.
Yeah, my experience with Whisper is either you are untouchable or you get one-shotted. There's no middle ground.
Yeah.
Andrew, you want to take the next one?
Sure. I think I'll take the elephant in the room here and I'll talk about Marcel's list. So Marcel did his darndest, I'll make this PG, to have trip jumps still be a thing. And obviously, he made the point. If you are committed to really flying them well, and he flies them superbly, you can make it work. He ended up in the last round of Swiss beating Paul Heaver and almost knocked him out of the top 16. The three-time world champ, R. Marcel, almost knocked him out of the top 16. I was incredibly proud. So he was doing a list that I found incredibly irritating during testing, and that was probably what maybe convinced him that it was worthwhile, because he was running double intelligence agents on two different ships, and it was absolutely brutal. I was testing at the time just a TIE Defender shuttle combo, as you know, was incredibly popular at Worlds, and he just wrecked it because the double intelligence agent, there was nowhere I could go where he couldn't block me. It was really frustrating.
Large base ship with barrel roll. I mean,
yeah, it was really, really frustrating.
And that was his game with that. It used to be an alpha strike list. You just blow off the torpedoes and hope you win the game right there, right?
Yeah, so no, he still has proton torpedoes, but...
Oh, yeah.
There have been times where he actually hasn't fired them because it wasn't in his best interest.
Yeah, and that list now, in my opinion, kind of goes under our fourth point in our properties of a good list. That list preys on the ability to interfere with your opponent's goals.
Yep.
He says, hey, you want to move here? You want your actions? No, you can't have them. I'm going to shoot you with this 3-dice primary turret now because you're at range 1. And I'm going to eat at you slowly. You're going to get frustrated and start making dumb maneuvers. And now I won.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, patience is a total virtue with his list. And he's incredibly good at flying that list. I have to give him all the credit. He's done awesome.
Yeah, with the Bumpmaster 5,000 times 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to talk about a list near and dear to my heart, which showed up twice in the top 16, and that is Dengaru / Managar. This list, I know that it is a little bit of a black sheep in the community right now because they say, oh, it's too easy. It's too easy to play, but it is... The thing is that the list has so many of those things we talked about, right? It has action efficiency. Manaru passes focuses to Dengar, and with that overclocked astromech, you are recycling that focus every single time. It's infinite focus. It reduces dice variance by having Lone Wolf on both attack and defense, and that's every single time. And if you have that focus token, you're increasing your chances of evading and hitting every time. It has passive dice modification, like we said, with Lone Wolf. You have maneuverability. Those ships have fantastic dials. Both of the Jumpmaster 5Ks. Manaru usually has engine upgrades. So if you're trying to... The strategy with the Dengaru list, if you want to take it down, is kill Manaru. Or if you have enough Alpha Strike to just wipe Dengar off the table, you do that. But for most lists, it's take out Manaru right away. But she has engine upgrade and a great dial. She can bump you and then disengage.
I actually think it's best to kill Dengar because Manaru is very hard to get consistent shots on.
Well, I think it depends on your list, though, because I think defenders, their job is to hunt down Manaru, right? That's what I think, personally. It has the ability to interfere with your opponent by constantly having that type of modification with Zuckuss, right? It's like, hey, oh, you threw three evades? That's cute. Reroll them. And it's survivable because it has some good hit points. It has 18 hit points that are hard to get to with all of that modification. So that's one of these lists that almost touches all five of those points, and that's why it's really powerful. And honestly, I'm not surprised that it won Worlds this year.
I'm not necessarily surprised. It's definitely a tier one list. It hits all the points in my opinion, except for survivability. They don't have a lot of hull. They don't have a lot of agility. You can kill these ships. I think too, the person that played it was very good, and his matchup in the finals was also very good. Like, two Dengaru players got matched up against each other. The two Rebel players got matched up against each other, so the counters to this list didn't have to actually face it until it got to the finals.
And, you know, for anybody who's a new player and they like Imperials, I'm telling you, most of your lists are going to have Palpatine in it. Palpatine is so good. It's a passive dice modification. As long as he's alive, you get to do it. You get to change any dice. But I think the strength in that, and Andrea, you can attest to this because I know you played lots of Palp bases when it first came out. You were the first one in our group to say this is really good.
Yep.
And why is Palpatine so good?
So, like you were saying, that ability to just be able to blanket any time you need to change a die result, you can, as long as he's alive, which most people, if they're flying a Palpatine list, a lot of times what they're going to do is just, you know, have the shuttle effectively be disengaged the entire time and just fly around. And if they get a shot off here and there, great. But they really don't care because the power is actually having that 8-point Palpatine. It comes with the support ships, is if you're flying that, you're usually flying something that, as we've kind of been discussing, can be a glass cannon where it can just evade everything and get really lucky with lots of green dice, or it could just blank out entirely and blow up in lots of little pieces. So having the ability to have that backup of that Palpatine to be able to change any single evade die result, you'd be amazed how many times with Soontirfel, as our, you know, prime example of, you know, you needed the four dice with your stealth device. So we're assuming it's a super Soontir with the stealth device, push the limit, the tie upgrade and thrusters. Having flown that for probably the better part of a year, you'd be amazed how many times I needed that Palpatine to change one of those blanks into an evade. Astonishing amount of times. It's granted, I statistically think I rolled dice poorer or worse than most people. Like, I think it's actually a mathematical certainty at this point. However, it's just incredibly critical to be able to change a result like that. And it doesn't even have to be something... Like there have been times where I had a really, really detrimental critical result on one of my ships. And it was one of the ones where, as an action, you can roll a die to flip the card down. And like, I failed at that roll like multiple times and finally just caved and used Palpatine to flip it down. because it was just affecting my gameplay that much to have this critical sitting there that I couldn't turn over.
I think the most amazing part about Palpatine is we talked earlier about one thing that makes some abilities bad is the restrictions and all the conditions. Palpatine has zero restriction. It's just like, hey, whenever you feel like it, yeah, just do it. I guess its restriction is you only get to do it once a turn, but that okay. It doesn't matter. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
I mean,
that's like the most important.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, just the fact that you can do it from anywhere on the map, there's no range, like most of the cards that have a range restriction. You can target anybody. There's no limit into what you can target, how you can use it. Like I said, you could use it to try and flip down a crit. You could use it as an evade. You could use it on an attack. I mean, the versatility and the flexibility of it is what is a big part of what makes it so powerful.
Now, I'm going to take a tangent here. A little bit of theory crafting.
Can I say one thing about the cool way I force my opponent to use their Palpatine?
Yeah.
So this was in Worlds. This was against Philip Horney. And in our match, I attacked his Whisper with the Slaver. I only rolled one hit. And he rolled. And he didn't actually roll any evades. So I forced him with Zuckuss to re-roll his blank into an evade so I could trigger Gunner and Bossk. He actually spent Palpatine to turn his evade into a blank so he could take the hit and just take the shield.
Ah.
So another awesome use of Palpatine. I mean, I think I'm winning if I'm forcing my opponent to take damage, but it's just kind of a funny way to, like, using Zuckusses to make my opponent roll evades, and my opponent's using Palpatine to make himself not roll evades.
That's fun. Yeah.
That's another thing I think goes into Palpatine. Like, it's a cool auto result thing, but it's also a skill to know when to use it.
Absolutely.
And when to save it.
Absolutely.
It's not just like, okay, I'm Soontar, I'm shooting first. Oh, I rolled 3 out of 4 hits. I'm just going to palp the fourth one to a hit. That would, most cases, be a bad idea.
Yeah. Yep. Like, literally in 95% of cases.
Yeah. Unless you're literally not going to get shot at the rest of the round.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't do that.
Exactly.
Here's my tangent. Would you still use Palpatine if there was a range 1-3 restriction?
Yes.
Oh, sure. I think it would just
change your flying style a little bit.
it would make Palpatine not as oppressive in the matches where you've damaged the shuttle and your opponent's trying to run, and with collision detector they're flying over the asteroids and then they get away and now they're still affecting the game with Palpatine. Now they would actually have to bring that shuttle to bear.
I'm going to keep going. Would it still be good if it was range 1-2?
Yeah, it would still be good. Because I think more people, like, if you look at the way the Howards fly the Palp shuttle, their shuttle's engaged the whole time. It's a battle shuttle. It's a tank. They use the health, and they fight. I think they fly it correctly. Too many people don't engage the shuttle. But they use the health. They use the attack. They use every part of that ship as a weapon when they play. And that's how they sometimes table people.
Yeah, I mean, the shuttle is nothing to scoff at. I mean, it's not a weak ship. It's just got valuable cargo, but there's no reason not to use it in a fight.
Especially when you have Sensor Jammer and Palpatine, all of a sudden it's like, oh, you rolled 3 hits and the shuttle's taking 1 shield.
Mm-hmm. And then it's throwing 3 die right back at you.
Yep. Or blocking you and denying you actions and shots, and yeah, it's pretty nasty.
And then, so we talked about these lists, we talked about all these abilities. Now let's get to the playstyle part. So, in my opinion, I think that there are two very basic types of playstyles, and we can kind of break it down a little more after that. Are you a patient player or are you an aggressive player? If you're more into the, I need to have a good formation, get the right approach, you're willing to disengage to get better positioning on your opponent, a lot of times you're a more patient player. And I will say that most of the players that were in the top 16, a lot of them were very patient. They tried to find their spots, and then when it was there, they went for it. Your other type of player is your aggressive player. A good example of this list is anything with an alpha strike potential, right? Triple jumps used to be this extremely aggressive style. You said, hey, I have three giant torpedoes here. I'm going to blow your face away. And you just kind of went for it. Your jousting lists, though they're not super prevalent right now, they are aggressive. You just kind of, you go in there. Of course, the flying matters, but your goal is to throw as many red dice at somebody as you can. You're jousting them a lot of times. A couple of other ways to look at it, and you're building your list. Do you like to fly more ships or less ships? You have swarms, and then you have your two-ship rebel builds. You know, there's Dash and Lothal. In the top 16, we had Miranda and Cornhorn, which is a very patient list, right? You're working with bombs. You got to find your spot. You're regenning over time. Other types of list play styles, if you like lots of dice modifications, changing your luck, you know, when you have rerolls or get a lot of tokens, your type of defender list is a great thing. Anytime you have a gunner, a Han Solo, those type of abilities where you get to redo the things that went wrong when you're attacking, if that's what you like, maybe those are the type of lists you want to go for. There are control lists. There's stress control. There's ion control. There's a bumping. I think Marcel's list is a form of control list, right? You're dictating the game when you're flying that type of list. And then there's the type of list I like to call the fly better list. It's those players that can take a ship that you don't maybe see too often or isn't meta prevalent. Is that, if that's your thing, you're really good at flying and positioning, sometimes you can sacrifice some of the efficiency on the ships if you can just outplay your opponent.
That's
well, honestly,
true.
Too, if you have a great list and you don't know how to fly it, it's not actually going to be much good to you. So if your ability is to fly seven TIE fighters in formation and corner your opponent and get lots of shots, that you're probably actually better off running that, even though that might not be the best list for the tournament, than you trying to run double IGs or, you know, some other list that you are not good at predicting the boosts and the barrel rolls and that kind of a thing.
Ron, you hit the nail on the head here. You know, building the list is definitely the beginning, but you have to be, it doesn't matter what you put out there, you have to be able to fly it. When it comes to researching lists, I definitely recommend using things like List Juggler. Look on the FFG forums, on Reddit, the X-Wing TMG subreddit. I mean, there's lots of lists out there. You can see what the best players are playing, so that way you're not kind of lost in your list building. Now, I definitely know, and I am definitely one of you guys, if you are a special snowflake, and I will say I am a special snowflake at heart for sure, because I try to be like, all right, I just want to build my own thing. Now, sometimes it doesn't always work. If you go into it and you're saying, all right, I need, or I want, if your desire is to, you know, win a tournament, you say, all right, I'm trying to find what is the best thing to fly, use those resources. There's nothing wrong with that. Net listing, I don't really, it's not a big deal. This game is all about flying, and even if you have the same thing as somebody across the table, you can fly it completely differently and get totally different results every single game. Ron, you made a point when we first introduced these segments, said that most importantly, you know, X-Wing tournaments are their long days, but if you don't enjoy the list you're playing, you're not going to have fun. And if you're not having fun,
you're
there's
playing
no point.
Games wrong.
Right, exactly. There's no point there.
You're also not going to do well.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer that if you're not enjoying what you're doing, you're not going to perform.
Yeah, I mean, because you're not focused and you're not having fun. It just, don't do that.
Part of the reason I flew the list that I flew at Worlds was because I actually enjoy the challenge of trying to line up shots with those four ships. And I found it fun.
Absolutely. So that has been our step two. And we'll continue step three next episode. We are now going to go into our next segment.
The Gold Squadron podcast is sponsored by Dragonfall, the Midwest premier gaming event. Visit dragon-fall.com for more information.
So we've reached a new segment that we're going to be trying out here for a while. Hopefully you guys like it. This is the Look into the Archives by Alex Mehring.
Yeah, so as you've probably noticed over some of these episodes, I will usually chime in with lore tidbits and stuff like that, and that usually dictates how I fly and stuff like that. So I figured it would be a cool little segment we could do to kind of show the background of some of these pilots and ships that you guys play little miniatures of on the table. And in honor of our world's champion, I figured we could go into two pilots known as Dengar and Manaru. So Dengar was born on Corellia. He grew up, kind of had like one of those rough childhoods. He got into swoop racing. Swoop racing is basically like Star Wars choppers. Lots of worlds had both professional and illegal swoop racing. Early in his life, he got into bounty hunting, got into that pretty early. He teamed up with Boba Fett, Bossk, Lats Razi, and Asajj Ventress. They all did like one big train heist job. There's an episode of Clone Wars about that one. But when he really started to come into fame was when he got challenged by a fellow Corellian swoop racer named Han Solo. So they did a illegal swoop race, and at the end of that race, Han was on an elevated part of the track, jumped over Dengar, and with the exhaust from his swoop bike, burned and deformed Dengar's face. So that's why you usually see Dengar wrapped up in armor and cloth and stuff like that around his face. And with that injury, Dengar actually crashed and was impaled in his brain. And so he actually got picked up by the Empire, and the Empire had to do a lot of cybernetic experimental stuff to Dengar, which actually removed all emotion from him and just made him heartless killer. So he worked for the Empire for a little bit. This is how he came into contact with Manaru. So Manaru is part of a race called the Azura, and they have also cybernetic technology, which comes in the form of an upgrade card you might know, Tiny Mind Link. So he met Manaru. She was actually under Imperial captivity. They were testing on her with some cybernetic stuff as well. And he had saved her from the facility because she had mind link with him and he got to experience emotion again. That's how they started their relationship. So after freeing Manaru from Imperial captivity, Dengar found out that there was a pretty big bounty on Han and he wanted his revenge. So he started hunting Han down, almost caught up to him at Hoth. As they were evacuating, he almost caught up to Han, but was pretty much always one step behind Boba Fett in tracking him to Bespin. He actually met up with Manaru again at Bespin. She was a dancer, and they kind of just met up, said hi, went their separate ways again. And where they really started to get together was she got enslaved by Jabba when Boba gave Han and Carbonite to Jabba to complete the bounty. Dengar was waiting for him, but couldn't actually get to Han before Boba turned him in. So he decided to free Manaru after Jabba was killed at the Pit of Carcoon. They actually saved Boba from the pit. They found out that he blew up the Sarlacc with his armor, crawled out. Manaru actually stopped Dengar from killing Boba. They fixed Dengar's cybernetic implants with Manaru's help, and Boba was best man at their wedding. That's a abridged version of the Dengaru story.
I do believe the Atani Mind Link is a picture of an Azurin, right?
Yes.
The actual card?
Yes.
I thought so.
Can we confirm, is that Manaru in that picture?
I don't think.
I don't,
right
maybe.
Now... So
it could be.
Yeah, it could be. I will make the disclaimer that with these kind of lore segments, I will not be sticking to strict canon things. I will definitely be dipping into legends and stuff. So unless something is proven otherwise, it is still valid to me. if our listeners have anything that they want us to go over, I'll definitely up for suggestions, find some out there stuff that'll make me learn more. I'm going to be doing pilots, ships, planets, anything in the whole Star Wars universe we'll go over.
There you go. Here, call to action. On our Facebook page or through our email, let us know what is the next pilot or pilots that you want Alex to cover on the next episode.
Or even upgrades.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I think this is a really cool segment.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted? What have you done with those plans?
What have you done with those plans is probably my favorite part, because we get to talk about what I actually do, which is host events. Lots of stuff going on. We're in, right now as recording this episode, we're in the middle of November. Saturday, December 17th, is our Imperial Assault Regional Championship. First Sunday of each month is X-Wing, Demo and Game Day. The second Sunday each month is Imperial Assault. The third Sunday each month is Star Wars The Card Game or Star Wars LCG. And the fourth Sunday each month is Armada. All these events are what we call Demo and Game Days. They're two-part events. As a new player, you can come out. We will teach you the game. You'll get promos just for learning how to play the game. If you decide that you like the game and you want to purchase it, you can get a 20% off your first purchase. And then you can also jump right into the game day portion, which is just us playing a couple rounds of pretty casual Swiss rounds. We give prizes based on the record. It's not a tournament. We don't play until there's one winner, and only the winner gets prizes. So we do those every month. And then we also have a variety of different leagues that you can join. We have an X-Wing League, we have an Armada League, and we will be starting a Destiny League the first Friday in December. I know that's going to be a huge game. We have a ton of people coming out for our launch event. So lots of events to practice. We are working on the regionals for X-Wing and Star Wars The Card Game, which will be in February. Everything's not locked down yet, so I don't want to really go into much detail. But come into the store, learn how to play Star Wars. Someone will be happy to teach you.
And something else to throw in there. The Hoth Open has been announced, and registration for that for Adepticon is actually going to be November 21st. The event was extremely popular last year. I totally expect it to sell out this year because they're not announcing it super late. And now we understand what the expectations are for the winners and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited. I'm kind of torn on whether or not I'm kind of torn about that event. Like, there's like a bunch of them to go to this year, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's one going on in Texas, California, Washington, New York, and here, Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, five in the U.S. I mean, good for us. Sad for the rest of the world.
I was going to say, a lot of people are not happy about that.
Yeah, I wish
I understood the reasoning, but I don't know.
Now, I mean, I know... I don't get it. Alex and Frank, they did explain on our live show that, you know, there's some things that they can't get into / don't have the power over. It's just unfortunate. I know there's we've talked about this before. There's tons of great players in Australia. Why doesn't Australia get a little more love? I don't get it, but, you know, we're not in charge.
Didn't they do it worldwide last year, though? Like, there was only one in the U.S.
I think a lot of the ones they added were mostly U.S.
Like, yeah, and there was less
all the coasts plus Texas.
Last year, I think there was only eight last year.
Yeah, but there was only one in the U.S. That means there were seven in the other parts of the world. I don't know. I think that there maybe might be some opportunity for them to tweak the system. I think maybe if it's a cost thing they're worried about, maybe find someone like a Pastimes to host the event overseas. So they're not actually having to send all of FFG over there to run that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I think that might be a solution. I mean, that's kind of how, Grand Prix and stuff work. Wizards of the Coast doesn't go to every single Grand Prix and Pro Tour all over the world. You know, they do send some of their people, but Grand Prix are run by tournament organizers. I think that's something that maybe they need to look into, because I feel bad for Brazil. I know Brazil would love to have one of these things.
Yeah, they need all the waves first, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think Brazil even gets, like, tournament kits or anything of any kind.
Man, we need to get with our Brazil guys, like, collect a collection fund. Let's send them some ships and some tournament kits down there.
I like it. Let's close this thing out, guys. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners, everybody who has liked our Facebook page. Okay, so Andrea, you were like, you remember last episode we were talking about, like, oh yeah, we'll get like 400 likes, you know?
Yeah.
Right? So we are over 1,000.
Yeah, that's amazing.
What's our next milestone, guys? What do you think?
1,500,
yeah,
right?
1,500.
All right. Our world's coverage is what really bumped us up there. Definitely anticipate growing that. Next Worlds in 6 months, we're going to be back there. We're going to be doing the stream again. And if FFG doesn't give us internet again, I have figured out a solution for that. So we're gonna stream every single day at Worlds.
Let's do it.
I mean, I started working on 2017 Worlds the day I got home. So there are plans, people.
I can't wait, too, now that we got some equipment to do some streams of the store. Are we going to stream the regional championship?
Oh yeah, we're going to stream the regional championship.
All right.
Sure.
Speaking of which, should we do a little save the date plug for that regional championship?
Please do.
So our X-Wing regional is going to be on Saturday, February 4th. And then it's also going to carry over onto Sunday the 5th. The Swiss rounds will be on Saturday the 4th, and then our cut to top 16 will be on the 5th.
And before anyone freaks out, I understand it's on Super Bowl weekend. There's nothing we can do about it. That was the date that was given to us. But the way it'll work is we'll do all the Swiss rounds on Saturday. Only the top 16 will have to come back on Sunday. And we plan to be done with the top 16 rounds, as well as the redemption tournament, which we run on Sunday for anyone that played on Saturday, didn't make the cut to top 16, that traveled, and they still want a chance at some really awesome prizes that they can play in the redemption event. Both of those events will be finished by 4 p.m. CST, so you still have time to make it to your Super Bowl party.
Yeah, this is going to be my first regional, guys.
Really?
Yeah. Really?
Yep.
How's that possible?
You've been playing longer than me, and I went last year.
He had the baby. The baby
was right.
That's right. She was born right on regionals. I forgot
about
that.
My regional baby.
Because I remember I had to stream that thing by myself, and I didn't know what I was doing. So
I'm pretty sure we didn't stream.
No, we did. We streamed it.
Okay, we just had struggles.
Yeah, I luckily had Sozin there to help me out. Otherwise, fair. I was struggling real hard.
Yeah. This year, I'll be there. My wife is not pregnant, so there will be no baby on regionals. And
might want to knock on something. You can't still make that happen. Regionals is a few months away.
That would be quite a quick turnaround.
Well, not that she would actually have the baby, but you said my wife's not pregnant. I said,
All right. Let's close this out. We're getting a little loopy. It's late. You know, if you ever have any questions you need answered, go ahead, send us a message through Facebook or shoot us an email, goldsquadronpodcast@gmail.com. I'm working on the website. It's going to be goldsquadron.com. If you go there right now, you're not going to find anything because it doesn't quite exist yet. We're going to be putting up our show notes. We're going to be putting little articles for all of our episodes, and going to be reaching out to some other people in the community and even some of the listeners. Say, hey, you have something to say? Let us know. We'll put it on the website. That's going to be great. If you haven't liked our Facebook page, what are you doing? Just go ahead and do it. It's a button. Click the button. If you're in the Chicago area and you want to come down to Pastimes and hang out or just ask for a game, join our local group. You can reach that really easily by going to www.pastimes.net/StarWars. Thank you for all of our Patreon support. You guys are amazing. I can't wait to get you guys the cool swag and to see some of the swag we have coming. Some great stuff coming. If you want to be a part of it, go to patreon.com/goldsquadron because, like I said earlier, there's only, oh, look at that now, 26 spots only now. So we'll see you later. Ron, thank you.
Thank you for having me, Dion.
Andrea, thank you.
You're welcome.
Alex, thank you.
Thank you for everything you do, Dion.
You are the master.
He's for Dion.
Everything has gone as I had foreseen it. Gold Squadron, out.